Hello, welcome to the Shut Your Face podcast with your host, me, Bree. I'm super excited you guys are here. Thank you so much for listening to this shit show. This is the second season, and I couldn't be more thankful for all of our guests that took the time to talk to me. It's so freaking cool. Go check us out on Patreon for early access and exclusive content. And then lastly, thank you so much to our sponsors, Bemar Media and Leather and Lights. I kind of happen to know them just a little bit. They're pretty cool. Anyways, let's get on into it, shall we?
Thank you for doing this, first of all. Second of all, just a little bit of background about you. You do graphic design and you do computer work of that nature, and you guys also have a reining program, correct?
Yes, ma'am, and we have ventured off into the cow horse world as well.
Very cool. Well, yeah, no, so tell me a little bit of this. You do graphic design, and then you also do reining, so now you're going to do ranch horse too?
Well, the cow horse, the NRCHA, oh. The Rein Cow Horse Association, yeah.
Oh, cool. Well, that'll be fun.
Yeah. My daughter was just reserve world champion, and she's only been boxing like less than a year. And she did it on a reining mare that's won 10,000 in the reining. So off to a good start.
That is a good start. It's grown crazy, not just NRCHA, but cow horse in general, all of it, ranch, cow horse, all of it.
Yep.
So how long have you guys been in the reining industry?
Well, I always had kids. I always had horses. Came from a non-horse family, but always begged, borrowed, or stole to get whatever I could ride. And then I got married to a family that had horses and liked to play with the cutting and cow horse a little bit. So that got us off to that start. And then when I had my first child, I read somewhere in a Reiner magazine that a college kid had supported himself and paid his way through college by training a reining horse a year. And so we had always had, you know, weekend horses and traded a lot of horses, but just cheap horses. And so at that point, I bought my son was 2 years old, and I was wanting to stay home with him and not farm him out while I went to a job. So I bought 2 yearling fillies from Francois Gautier, and it all started there. And that was 31 years ago. So,
wow. Yeah, 30 years is a long time.
Yeah. So since then, you know, we kind of got more established, and I trained for a while and had a, you know, handful of non-pro ladies that we went to the smaller and regional reining shows, and then my kids got big enough to where they were showing and making money in horses, and we trained and bought and sold and kept our kids well mounted, and here we are.
So you've seen the industry change. You've seen a lot of different changes happen over 30 years.
Yeah. I mean, I'm no expert. So from whatever level I was operating at the time, it's matured quite a bit.
Do you think that the cow horse thing, have you seen the cow horse kind of go into reining? Because didn't NRHA just add like cow horse classes?
No, I think NRHA is trying to dabble with the ranch riding stuff. So the ranch riding stuff is AQHA's version of trying to get those using horses and ranch-type horses back into their program, I think. Mm-hmm. So the Reined Cow Horse Association, you know, those guys, they are, you know, the three event, the fence work, the dry work, and the, or they call it the rein work now, and then the cutting, the herd work. So that's, that cow horse thing has always been its own thing. So, and my family was in that. Now my sister-in-law, she's the number one NRCHA non-pro, leading non-pro. She's almost a $1 million rider in their deal. So and our, my niece and nephew show, and my other nieces and nephews have shown in the past. So yeah, it's a family affair. So yeah, we've seen quite a bit of it. We've never really been too big into the ranch riding part. My daughter, one time, we've got a little gelding that she's a three-time AQHA reigning world champion her first 3 years out of the youth. So she did quite well. And one of the years that she was showing him in the reigning, she decided to cross-enter into the ranch riding at the AQHA World Show, and I think she was sixth that year. So that was right when they were getting started with their classes. You know, they'd been doing it a few years and trying to sort out all their rules and whatnot. So, but yeah, it's gotten way more sophisticated and ramped up also.
Do you think that with NRHA adding ranch, do you think it's going to devalue NRHA? Because,
you know, I remember it's probably been 8 or 10 years ago where they started, I believe it was the Derby show, their Derby in OKC, that they started holding, or they tried holding some ranch riding classes out back in that big outdoor arena. And I think a lot of people, you know, probably poo-pooed it, but a lot of people had real fun at it. And a lot of the reiners that were fairly decent reiners, not just the ragtag bottom end that couldn't make it in the reining, but a lot of the good people and the good horses have gone over to the ranch riding because it's just a change. And it's a little less, you know, maybe a little less show horsey sometimes. And it's gotten so big. So I think that it's a really good compliment. It used to be that kind of the leftovers went that direction, but now I know people are spending good money breeding for them, breeding for the movement, the mind, the, you know, the overall look. And I think the Ranch Association has kind of lined out some of what they're looking for and got more of a uniform standard than when they first started out as far as judging. So I think it's just a perfect complement to all the other Western disciplines.
Well, I meant it in a, I didn't mean it like that. I meant it like, you know, NRHA is reining. It's not a ranch association. We have ranch associations. And, you know, once you start seeing everybody dabble into everything else, it's just mud. That's what happens when you mix all the colors. You get mud. So it's like, that's what I was kind of getting at. Like, do you think that it's become too popular to where now everybody wants a piece of that pie instead of, like, taking care of their own pie? Because now you see ranch everywhere, and it's like, okay.
Yeah,
from
I think,
an economical standpoint, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like I talked to somebody the other day, and they said that they had been a hardcore reiner for many, many years, came from a family of reiners and deviated to the cow horse. And my daughter asked if she ever showed reining anymore, and she said, no, it's too hard to do both. So I think with the real true blue ranch riding people, I think it's the ranch, I think, has gotten specialized. So I don't think you're going to have the horses that do everything all the time. But as far as value and holding classes at a show to just have fun and lighten things up, I just don't think that's ever a bad idea. So to say they have it everywhere or to mix and match whatever at whatever horse shows, I mean, as show management can and warm up and the facilities and all can handle it, I just don't think it's ever a bad idea to let people get a taste of something else and maybe another avenue to market some horses or get new customers or whatever. So I don't know that I would consider it devaluing or you know, muddying it up as much as it's just broadening the world.
Gotcha. Yeah, because you can kind of get both answers with that question. Like, I've seen a lot of people see it both ends of the spectrum. They're like, yeah, it's great, blah, blah, blah. And then other people are kind of like, no, you know, don't add it, da, 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 da. So it seems to be kind of like a black and white answer for that. There's never really any gray with it, which I get it. I mean, that's with anything you do. So back to... You guys have been in the reining industry, but you're just now recently going into reined cow. Why did you decide to do that?
Well, my daughter, I quit showing years ago when it was more important to keep our kids mounted. So, you know, we can always, I mean, we're not overly wealthy people, so it takes something to keep those kids mounted. And so I kind of took the back seat and started, you know, I always helped them ride their horses and keep them trained and whatnot, but we kind of focused on the kids and letting them show. So when my son left home, it was up to my daughter. So she has been showing since she was 8 years old, and I think she just we moved to Texas, and she went to all the big shows. She's a finalist at the big shows on a variety of horses, and we were doing pretty good, but I think she just needed a little break. And about that time, from the reining, that is, about that time, my sister-in-law was really doing well in the cow horse, and so the family, you know, as a whole was like, hey, come over and try this. And so my daughter was friends with somebody who did the cow horse, and it just kind of was a natural evolution and just a little healthy change. You know, I still love reining. It's still in my veins, and I think we have a horse that we're going to cross back over and do a little reining on. But I think it was just a little interesting to do something different for a little bit and to have horses versatile enough to do, you know, program versatile enough to do a couple different things. I think it's just fun.
Yeah, it is good for their minds, for the horses' minds, to mix it up. Anybody will tell you that, like, you know, to try to keep them fresh, I guess, in a good perspective of it.
Well, so, it keeps us fresh, too, you know.
Yeah, you know what it does, actually, because I kind of talked about this last week about how, touched on, you know, like you said, your daughter kind of needed a break from the reining. I don't think people quite realize, unless you've shown professionally before, you really hit it hard before, how much strain it can be, not only physically but mentally, for a person to show. Like,
I believe that. And especially, you know, you have, I mean, I'm not going to pick on my daughter because she's fantastic, but if you, anybody that's had a certain measure of success, and then, like I know in her case, in our case, she retired her old standby gelding. And so going from a horse that you know what you have every time you walk in the pen, I mean, that horse, I think in his whole career, which was like a 6-year career, he only came home without a paycheck 2 times. And so when you have a horse like that that you can count on, and then you have to go to newer, different horses, the pressure is, you know, I think people put pressure on themselves. And if you're accustomed to being a level 3, level 4 non-pro finalist and all the bigger shows, it's it is a lot of pressure. And it's a lot of expense. You know, the price of horses has gone up, and what's required has gone up. The quality has gone up, everything. So.
Now, back to the graphic design. So you grew up training and showing, like that's what you did for a living, and then you ended up going into graphic design, or did you always, that was what you were always going to do, you just didn't know it was going to be horses, or how did that transpire?
Yeah, so I didn't have anything horse-wise growing up other than ragtag odds and ends. I mean, I had a gated horse. I had a little POA pony. I had just whatever, you know. So no, I had people that wanted to support me, but I had no horse world support system. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
When I got married, I remember I had bought a half Appaloosa yearling filly. And I had raised her up and trained her and showed her in 4-H and whatnot. But when I got married, I still had her, and I traded her in with my father-in-law, or I think I took her to horse sale or did something. Anyway, I traded up to my first registered quarter horse. And so I was not training. I've always been an animal, you know, I like to train. I train dogs. I train my, you know, always stinked with my horses and tried to get them to do as much as they could do. And, anyway, being introduced to that show horse world, I just kept trying to trade up. So we've done all sorts of things in, you know, before my kids were around and before I started the show horse thing. We traded a lot of horses. Yeah, we would just see which ones were good and which ones were rotten, and would sift through them and try to, you know, make a buck and kind of pay for things, pay our way. And then when my son was born, that's when I first decided to say, hey, you know, let me try to build a horse or two a year, sell it, and try to make enough money to subsidize my husband's income to where I didn't have to go out and get a regular job. And so then when I started training, I had sold a horse, a very nice young horse, that sent it to a trainer, and they kind of got into a wreck and kind of wrecked the mare. And then those people asked me to fix that mare since I had trained her for 2 years. And so that's what started me into training is, you know, and of course I had no idea what it meant to give up your non-pro card or what, you know, I had no idea about any of that at the time. I just said, sure, you know, I'll take your money and ride your horse. So that kind of gave birth to that. And I trained for about 8 or 10 years. So, but, you know, did okay. I mean, I had nice horses, nicer horses over the years, had very, very pleasant customers that did well at the little shows and had a bunch of fun. And, you know, we had some very well-bred horses, and I had a lot of, you know, made some very good friends that are leaders in our industry. So it was very much a upward and onward process during that time. And, you know, I wasn't on the cover of the magazine or anything, but I learned a lot and upgraded quite a bit to where then when my kids started showing, you know, they did very, very well.
I mean, I think that, I'm not knocking anybody that kind of just walked into a higher level, but I feel like you, I don't know the right word. I feel like, you know, doing it like you said you do it, steps up, you just kind of take steps up, mm-hmm. and you just keep kind of going up the stairs. That's kind of like the only way to reach success if you really want to have it like concrete in your head and really do something with it. You know, it just seems like those people that are kind of handed it to them and they don't necessarily take those steps, it's like they'll fade off or you don't see them again or anything like that. So, you know, to say that you went about it that way is admirable. I mean, that's honorable. That's how anybody wants to say that they did it.
Kind of the hard way makes it stick.
Yeah, exactly.
Hard way makes you appreciate what you have a lot more. I mean, now we talk about that because our kids, especially my daughter, we were just watching a bunch of home movies about, you know, I mean, I found a show run from 1991 that was the very first AQHA show that I ever entered in my life.
Was that on VHS?
Oh, it is. It is. And we just, my husband converted those as a present for me for Christmas. And so we were watching them. Anyway, this horse show, it was in Albany, Oregon in 1991. Bob Avila was riding, Todd Bergen, John Slack. I have all this on video. And of course I showed, and my little sister-in-law was 14 or 15 at the time. And so she showed. So, I mean, it was really fun looking back to where we started, but my point was my daughter, who came along, I think I had her when I was 32, we were all beyond those cheap, low-end horses at that time, so she's only been around good horses, and so we talk about that as, oh, my word, if you only had to ride what I rode when I was starting out, you would appreciate these good ones a whole lot more. So she's been preached to enough, she does, but yes, there's something to be said for coming at it the long way.
Yeah, and you know what, it's a good character build for children to recognize and appreciate what their parents sacrificed to be able to give them, you know.
Yeah.
You know, sit here and say that she doesn't know the hard way. I'm pretty sure she does know the hard way. It's just, you know, every good parent wants to give their kids a
more
good
than what they have. Yep, the leg up, yep.
Exactly. So now, so you grew up around horses and your husband did too?
My husband did. So his family got horses first when he was about 6 and they didn't know anything and they started with the drill team and all this and that, all the odds and ends that people do. But his dad ended up roping. And so they had a very successful covered arena with roping events and open horse shows and all that type of stuff. And then his dad decided to get into the cutters and the cow horses a little bit. So, you know, I know one of my father-in-law's idols was Don Murphy way back in the day, and that's when, you know, his kids were little and he was going and doing a bunch of stuff. And then My husband actually was in an accident at 16 and was paralyzed, and so he has not ridden. He has not ridden since then, but he did the horses with all of us in our married family the whole time. You know, he was a supporter and knew horses and had an eye and helped out and, you know, did what he could in that respect. So yeah, our family has very much, reigning has been good to us as far as a family and raising our kids.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to get to how did you guys meet? If he was horse and you really weren't.
Oh, well, what started out, and what's really funny is we're from an itty-bitty town, you know, a couple thousand people. And I remember when I was in fourth grade, so we went to school together in fourth grade, he and I. And when I was in fourth grade, I had this little POA pony that cost like $200 or whatever. And I rode that. I didn't even own a saddle. I had a bareback pad, and I rode my pony across town to an open show that his dad was having at their arena. And so that was when I first...
It was love at first sight.
Well, he was probably a punk, and I probably hated him. But anyway, but that was my first, like, when I met his dad and his family and whatnot. Of course, they just thought I was just some poor kid from across town, which I was. But anyway, then in high school, I actually dated my husband's best friend. And then after high school, I wanted to work and get in, you know, good, quote unquote, good horses. And so I actually went to work for my husband's dad at their arena, cleaning stalls and lunging and saddling and stuff like that. And that's when it was love at first sight. So that was the end of the story. So I guess I married
cool
the family and not just my husband. So, yeah.
That's cool, though. You probably didn't put two and two together until you went back and worked for him, and he was like, "Oh, you were that girl that showed up on the pony."
Probably.
That's cool, though. I always like to hear like stories like that. So, but they don't. So then now, but you're not from Texas. You guys ended up moving to Texas, because that's where everything's at. Is that why?
Yeah, so we started out in in Oregon, and then and that's where my family was and his family was. So that's we were in the Willamette Valley of Oregon, and then when my son was born, we went to Colorado with my husband's job. So we were in Colorado for 26 years, and then ended up here in Texas 8 years ago.
Yeah, it's an ordeal. I had an episode with a lady. She moved from Oregon to Oklahoma, and I can imagine having to move all of that. How many days did that take?
Oh, my gosh. Well, at the time, we only had a few horses. I think we only had, like, three horses. So, but we moved ourselves, and, you know, it was like the Beverly Hillbillies. And then when we moved from Colorado to here, it was a much bigger deal because we had, you know, we had our panels and we had stall fronts and we had dog houses and we had, you know, I don't know, 10 or 12 horses and all the paraphernalia. So, but my family has big trucks, so they helped us a great deal. So we loaded two or three big trucks, and the furniture company moved our house, and here we are.
And that's all she wrote.
Yep.
All right, let me get back to this right here. I wanted to ask you, what's one thing that you would want the public to know about you, or the reining industry to know about you?
Well, just that I really, really value people trying to do a good job. So if people contact me in what I do for a business now in the graphic design and whatnot, they are wanting to upgrade. They're wanting to elevate their business. They're wanting to elevate, you know, their whole operation and whatever that might be, to whatever level that might be. And what I would want people to know about me in that respect is that I'm right there with you. I don't care if you've got a, you know, stud horse that you're trying to stand for $1,250 and, you know, you breed 30 mares a year to, you know, an industry leader, some top 20 trainer that needs to, you know, promote their facility that they just spent, you know, $20 million on. So I treat all my customers the same. I know each is trying to do the best at whatever level that they are operating at. And, you know, anything at any time can be elevated and promoted to the best of its, put the best foot forward. So I guess that would probably be one of the biggest things, is that I appreciate it, I get it, and I work hard at it.
Yeah, it's a lot, because me and you both do graphic design, and it's a lot. I was telling somebody the other day, like, I don't think people realize the computer time that can go into something. Are quick and easy, and it's not that big of a deal. You hit it right, nail on the head, but then sometimes it's not. And if you really want to do a good job, it's a lot of computer time.
Yes, yes. And that's the thing. And I charge a flat rate for everything. So that's, I always have to tell myself during the difficult ones is, okay, this is paying for the 10 easier ones.
Right.
it all comes out in the wash, you know?
Well, you probably remember when Canva wasn't around.
When what was?
You've heard of Canva?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I heard people. So I print banners, and we print flags and all that kind of good, like, promotional stuff besides the embroidery or whatever. So people will send me, you know, stuff they already have. I've actually bordered quite a lot of logos that you've done, which are amazing. But no, they'll send me stuff. They'll be like, can you send me stuff from Canva? And this was a couple of years back, because I remember when Cork was the main thing, which was a layout program. And when Adobe, do you remember Cork?
Kind of. Yeah, it's way back there.
Yeah, it is. And I'm telling my age now. Anyways, they would send me stuff from Canva, and I would be like, what is Canva? What is Canva? What is this? You know, and they showed me, you know, what it was, which I think it's great that people can tap into it. And be able to kind of do certain things and little things. But the industry, the programs in the industry in itself have just advanced so much. It's like, it's crazy to see some of the things that you can do that you couldn't used to do back in the day. Like, that's what I'm getting at. With Canva, somebody who doesn't have any experience can hop on there, which, again, is a great thing. That's awesome. They can hop on there and do some of the stuff that it took people like me and you. I remember learning Photoshop and just the pen tool in itself. I had to self-teach myself how to do that, like, you know, to be able to figure that stuff out in those programs. And now they can just do it in, like, a click, and it's
Well, but you know what? Every time I get to feeling sorry for myself about that situation, thinking that I'm going to be out of a job, about the time I start thinking that, people send me stuff that they've tried on their own, and they still are just beating their head against the wall, and they need something professional. And I try not to concern myself with what other people can do on their own or how I might not be needed, because the same thing with photography, you know, taking photos. I just took photos a couple weeks ago of a gal who, when I got there to take photos of this broodmare she had for sale, she told me, she said her and her husband had a fight, spent 3.5 hours, never got any, you know, good pictures, trying to take pictures of the stupid mare, and that she should have just paid me to come in the first place. So it's kind of that deal. You know, yeah, some people who are really resourceful and good can get stuff done, but a lot of people just burn their wheels and chase their tail and end up coming to me anyway, or you, or somebody like us, you know? So I try not to let it concern me too bad.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. It doesn't bother me at all, because, you know, it just kind of circles back around to what you were just saying. You know, you've got so many people trying to do so much in life, whether they work for themselves or not, but they're always going to be at a certain level. So, you know, when you're starting off, you might not can afford for somebody to make you a logo, so you got to do what you got to do, and then you work up, like exactly what you were saying. You know, so there's always going to be those steps in life with people. So no, I just thought it was interesting. I brought it up because I think it's cool to see how much the industry has changed. Like these kids don't realize how easy they have it with Canva, is what I'm trying to say. It's like, you know, You can but do what?
Still, things
how
like
quick?
Things like taking backgrounds off a picture. I remember somebody just a few months ago sent me like, well, wow, can't you just take the background off this picture? And yeah, and I keep testing all the programs that, you know, that offer new and wonderful things. But there's nothing like having some knowledge and skill and doing things by hand, not to be stuck in the past. I don't want to sound like I'm stuck in the past, but sometimes
no, uh-uh.
Like my husband and I just had this conversation over AI. Okay, AI is great, and oh, yeah, you know, it might put you out of a job, honey, and all these things. But I'm like, wait a minute. Have you actually tried anything livestock AI? You know, I mean, it just they just don't know. They might know what they know, you know, as far as like a race car or a whatever, whatever. But, I mean, they'll put five legs on a horse. They'll put, you know, it's just a train wreck when you're talking about animals sometimes. So, I try not to lose sleep over that.
Well, yeah, no, AI, you could, so AI, I've talked about this once, but not enough. Actually, it's funny you brought it up. AI is amazing. It's wonderful. But what nobody seems to talk about is there's going to be a lot of lawsuits regarding the there's no restrictions on it right now. So like you see celebrities out here, you see like these people create these pages and they'll make these celebrity photos and they'll make this stuff like that. Well, they're going to pick the wrong, you know, your average Joe Blow can't afford to attack them, but they'll pick the wrong celebrity who's going to sue them and you know, for making these photos. There's like no, they'll have to be some type of restriction on it, some way, shape, or form. It's gonna have to be.
I'm sure it'll evolve and it'll work itself out. So
yeah, but it's just so cool to see the way the industry just changed. Like you don't think things are changing when you're living in the moment,
right?
Until you're like past that moment and you're years later and you're like, oh wow, that's how we used to do it.
I know. Yeah.
So what is one of the what's one of the things that you think the reining industry has kind of kept solid throughout the years, or what? And then what's one of the things that you think has changed for the good that the reining industry has kind of tried to adapt and conform to elevate itself over the last 30 years that you've been in it?
Well, the reining, I think most people would agree that one of the best things they've done is just try to make a spot for everybody. So sometimes that seems like a little overkill. I've had opportunities to be on the eligibility committee of NRHA in the past, and we've had those conversations and just, you know, in the business end of it that we've, you know, experienced over our livelihood. But I think they've really done a good job, and I think the numbers have supported it. So just when people are saying, oh, my gosh, you know, you're going to split entries and split monies and blah, 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 then the entries end up supporting it and making it work. So I think the NRHA as an association has done a pretty good job making sure that it's attractive to a variety of people on whatever horse they can afford to come and participate.
Yeah, because it can be intimidating to kind of look at reining because it is expensive to show it, just like cutting. It's expensive to show it.
Well,
you know?
And it's hard. I mean, it's hard. Even when you think you have everything lined out, things happen. I mean, you can miss a lead. You can have a trot step. You can whatever, and it'll take you out of the money. So, you know, having the whole green is grass thing, that movement was, I mean, it's something that I'm not involved in, but it seems to be, people seem to enjoy it, and yeah, you know, I think they've done a good job.
Now, do you still, I know you said that you don't show anymore because you let your kids show and that kind of word thing, but do you still ride at all, any?
Yeah, I try to ride all the time, and I don't know, my daughter, she's got a mare that she's kind of like, oh, I want to do it all myself, but this mare was really, really good. I mean, she's a very, very good horse, and that's about the only one I don't ride. I ride everything else, and I like to tinker with stuff. And, you know, we all have things we're good at. So, like, my daughter and I ride together, and we've kind of done our own deal the last 3 or 4 years. And, you know, I have things that plug her holes, and she has things that plug my holes. And it's just always good to go, you know, get some feedback from other people and kind of look and see what people are doing and what expectations are and what's good and what's not. And just keep learning. I mean, you just can never stop learning. And now my family is all pushing me, trying to do the cow horse. So, you know, I'll tinker with the flag or whatever, or turn back, but I have yet to venture off and think that I'm going to have my own cow horse, but it's kind of in the back of my mind. So next one I might buy for me, and I might try that. So
you just made me think about something. So is NRHA kind of the same thing as NRHA as far as pro and non-pro? Do they have two separate? Because, you know, Aaron's just one of the world's greatest horsemen. Is that a completely separate event? Or
so the NRCHA has their whole, you know, they've kind of followed NRHA's format of they have levels of open aged events, and they have levels of non-pro aged events. And then introductory version of, like, our reigning rookie, their introductory version is the boxing. So that's where you can do, they have boxing derbies, and they have boxing classes. The boxing classes is the entry level in that you just, you do your dry pattern, your reining pattern, but then you just box the cow. You don't put it down the fence, and you don't circle it. So that's their version of rookie, and they have different levels within that. So, you know, you're limited, intermediate, and big non-pro, and then I think they have select too. So, and then you have your aged events and spectaculars, they're called, where you do that cow work. You do your rein work, and you do your herd work. So your world's greatest horseman is, what could I compare it to? It's kind of like the American performance horseman. You know what that is?
Yeah.
So that's kind of like their version of taking the very best of the best aged horses, as in older broke horses, and qualifying and making that it's truly the epitome of the older broke horses. So, and they added the fourth, of course, which is the steer stopping. So they've got their fence work where they chase down the
professional only, right?
No, non-pros can do that. Anybody can enter that, but you can only enter one rider, one horse. And then they did, 2 years ago, they started their world's greatest non-pro, which they hold with their Hackamore Classic in July. And my sister-in-law actually won the first one of those. So, or maybe the second one of those. Anyway, she won that 2 years ago. So, but they have that at a separate show. So the world's greatest, though, is open to anybody. So open means unrestricted open, not just open trainers.
Oh, okay. All right. That's what it's always better to ask to try to, like, figure it out instead of assume. Because, you know, there has been a lot. I'm pretty sure you can agree with this or maybe not, but even though I'm not actually showing, I obviously work in the industry, but there have been a lot of big, big events that have just kind of popped up over the last 4 to 5 years that were ever around.
Crazy. It's crazy. And I'll tell you with what I do and with my daughter, she works with me and helps me out, and she does the social, well, what she does in Stoney's Web Design is she does the social media management and the web stuff, and I do all the advertising and graphic design stuff. So, but we work together, and between people saying, oh my gosh, there's a horse show coming, I need this, this, and this, and then she does a lot of show coverage for her social media management, so, you know, somebody will have a killer run or need draw posts or whatever, and oh my gosh, there is a horse show. Sometimes there's two or three going on at the same time, and it keeps us hopping, yeah.
I'm glad you said that. I'm sorry, because I messed up initially. I knew that. You do web design, you do graphic design, and you also do photography.
Yeah. And my daughter does the social media stuff.
Very cool. Yeah. Okay.
We do everything.
Do what?
I said we do everything.
You know what? You're preaching to the choir. I get it.
Yep.
But I don't do web design. I don't do web design. I don't get any of that type of stuff, which that's cool that you guys are able to do that. But because, you know, when I say graphic design, you say graphic design, and then in my head, without actually coming out of my mouth, is everything that you think is associated with it, you know, like print, web, photo, all that kind of good stuff, papers, and everything. Well, that's good, though.
We just do the design work, though. We don't do any actual production.
Of the website.
Well, the website, we get, it's a turnkey finished website when we're done. But as far as, like, say I do a stall pop-up, I do the design for it, and then I send you to go order it yourself to have it built. Or a dry erase board, I design it, send you the camera-ready file, and then I tell you where you can order it, and you order it yourself.
I'd rather not do the design. I would rather just do the actual, have it made.
I can't abide by ordering for people. I don't want to be the secretary. I want to give you the art. Not me. So yeah, perfect match.
Yeah, this is what when somebody asked me for a logo, because I don't do print ads. I did print ads for 10 plus years in real estate graphics, and I'm wrong with it, but you know what I'm saying? Anyways, I will do a logo every now and then, but I have a certain style I want to stick to. I don't want to derive off of that. So I'll ask them, I'll be like, can you show me what you want it to look like? And when they show me something that looks like what you would do, I'll be like, this is who you need to call.
Cool. Well, thank you. Thank you.
Because I would rather be on the other end of it. I would rather be on the I would rather them send me your logo you made, and I put it on a hat, or I put it on a sheet or something, or I would rather do the other end of it. So that's
well, that's perfect. Yeah, that works.
Yeah, because I mean, that's funny we're talking about this, because this is probably something that doesn't get talked about a lot. You know, when it comes to creative work, whether it's graphic design or logos or whatever have you, whatever is creative oriented, people don't understand that there is no competition in that field. As far as I'm concerned, it's what the customer likes. Like, you have a
exactly.
Style, and if that customer likes it, then that's what they like. It's not a worse, better, side, left,
right.
It's not. It's just what they like. And appreciate that.
But that said, like, I always preach to my daughter, stretch yourself. You know, I always look at, like, I'll go a few months or a year or whatever, and I'll be, oh, my gosh, you're in a rut. So I always try to look at other people's work. I try to look at you know, regular magazines. I mean, whatever, car magazines or house magazines or whatever, just to try to get some different ideas and just to stay fresh.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times people put you in a certain category or a certain feel, and, you know, your tendencies may certainly lie there, but it doesn't mean you're not capable. So, like, I just did a political flyer for a friend that I have in Colorado. And it's like, wow, it was kind of fun to do something totally away from the regular stuff that I do. So I like to kind of try to stretch myself.
Yeah. Just like horses. You got to keep yourself fresh.
Yep.
But I mean, like, overall style, like, there's this girl I work with. She does realistic drawings. I can't do realistic drawings.
Right.
I don't. But she can't work on the computer, so it works out great. But anyways, so back to so why, I don't think you ever answered my question with this. So how did you end up doing graphics for the horse industry? Did you just decide that was kind of fit on at the time?
Way back when I bought my better horses and was trying to make a go of it and sell ones that were actually worth something, I hired a guy that my husband worked with. And he was techie and all this stuff, and I barely had a ginormous computer at home, so we hired him to build me a website. And this is way back when you did it in code and all this stuff. Anyway, this guy, he did his best. He tried really hard, but he spelled Philly with a PH. He absolutely had no idea what a horse should look like. I had stretched photos. It was just a mess. And so me being who I am, I was just like, well, you know what? I can do a lot better. And so I dinked with it and got our own website up. And then as I sold horses, and I brokered a lot of horses for a lot of trainers where we were, because it was off the beaten path, you know, not Texas and Oklahoma and not you know, anyway, when I was doing all that, I just, people went to my website and I kept up on it. That's the biggest thing, is I kept up on it and I answered people and I kept content fresh, and I had horses sold that were marked sold, and I didn't have a weanling picture for a 4-year-old, you know, I mean, I just kept up on it. And so people noticed, and pretty soon I was building websites for people. So it just kind of, it was something that I did on the side, because at the time, I mean, I went, you know, at least 15 years there where I was riding between 12 and 20 horses with my kids and stuff. So it was something I did on the side. But as things tapered off and we kind of got to showing the better horses, fewer shows, more major events, I did it more and more. And then, of course, we moved down here and we were riding with a lot of, we don't have an indoor where we live, so we would go and ride with all the friends that we've made over the years. And, you know, they'd ask me about different things, and just did a lot of elbow rubbing since we've been in Texas, and my business has just expanded in a crazy way. But just like, you know, all the horse industry. So it's just been a really good time.
Do you think that that's like, because, you know, I've talked about that before, how, you know, Texas and that whole central area, Oklahoma, Texas, kind of just that whole little valley right there, it's where people end up going. And I actually had Billy Smith on here like last year, and he touched on it a little bit about how, you know, it's weird to ask. Let me back up. You've got great horses like in Pennsylvania. You've got great horses in Washington, in California, in Florida. Florida's huge cow horse country. And to ask people to travel all the way to Texas for the big shows, it's almost like going to weed itself out if the idea or the probability of not wanting to kind of get out of that box that's been set for the entire industry. Like the whole, not just reining, cuttings out there, ropes out there, barrels in there, everybody, that's what everybody thinks. So do you think that maybe in the future it would be beneficial for the horse industry to step out of that box, or do you think people are just going to keep flocking there? As it is.
Like you say, there's a healthy market in any pocket of the United States she can think of. And then often, I mean, I was just watching a video during a webcast where Silver Spurs Ranch has a futurity money or incentive money up for a Guadalajara Classic reining event. So, I mean, so the horse industry is healthy everywhere.
Yeah, but where is that? It's in Oklahoma, right?
No, Guadalajara, Mexico. Yeah, so what my point is, and I know a lot of my friends, you know, that are judges, they judge all over. So my point is, I think that, you know, like you say, quality is everywhere and anywhere. But I just think that this area, and I didn't realize it until I moved down here, because we would always like come down here a week or 10 days before a major event and ride with friends. So, you know, we had a lot of connections and a lot of people were very generous with their time and facilities. But until I moved down here and we kind of spread ourselves around, we never want to overstay our welcome, but, you know, we're buying the occasional horse, but it's not like we have horses in training and are locked into anyone's program. We just show up, you know, Brian Bell, Jonathan Baruch, you know, you name it. We just go there, use their dirt and kind of travel around, and all the big guns down here. And so we never really realized how much everything is elevated. And then, like you say, you know, Decatur, Texas is 20 miles from me where my husband works. That's the rope horse, you know, rope horse central. I mean, you pick the top 20 ropers and half of them, if not more, are right there in Decatur. So, you know, the vets, the breeding stuff, you know, the rehab stuff, everything is just right here in this region. So I just don't think that it's ever going to not be that. It's just, in the cow horse, for an example, a lot of the big cow horse trainers have come here from varying places in the world, and it's just elevated everything. So I just don't think it's ever going to not be that way. Not to say that it's not great everywhere else, but when you surround yourself with others that are at the forefront of the industry, you are going to yourself be elevated. So it just rubs off.
Yes. No, I meant like location, in a location sense, like, because, and, you know, that's what I was trying to get at, because you've got a lot of great people, a lot of great horses that aren't in that little valley area, and that's what kind of me and Billy were talking about, like, you know, to try to cater to other parts of the country is something to keep in mind when you're keeping an industry at a growth rate that it's been, because, you know, all of it's kind of grown over the last couple of years, and to expect people to drop what they're doing and travel all the way to just one centralized place.
Oh, I get you. Yeah. Well, but look, and I mean, they have premier events in Florida and in Tennessee and Kentucky. Ohio, of course, is still has some big events. The NCRHA up there, North Central, in Minnesota is still holding its own. Colorado still has their Rocky Mountain Summer Slide. You know, it's, I mean, yes, I think, you know, from what I do everything on the computer, so it doesn't matter where you're just, you know, if you're in close proximity or not. So, but yeah, it's, you know, everybody, nobody is less important than anyone else. It's just when you are here in the heart of it, you feel it.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at, if they weren't going to move the heart a little bit, because the heart's kind of, you know, now it's going to die down a little bit because Yellowstone's off of the air and it's not going to get as much hype. Do you think, actually going into that really quick, do you think Yellowstone had a big impact on the industry or no?
Oh,
I've talked to a couple of people that kind of said it didn't.
Oh, no. I just think there's no denying it. I just, it was crazy. I didn't myself watch it. You know, there were some things about it that I couldn't do, but what Taylor Sheridan himself has done to our industry with the events, the Run for a Million, coupled with the Yellowstone deal, coupled with the whole, Teton Ridge deal. I mean, yeah, it's silly to say that it didn't have a huge impact.
I've heard that because I thought the same thing when they said it. They were like, no, I don't think it had a bit. And I'm like, are you serious right now? Because, like, no, before Yellowstone, there was not, I mean, which we can get into a whole rabbit hole with this. You know, once things get hyped and they get to be popular and they grow, you're always going to have some type of backlash no matter what it is. You know, you're always going to have that. And we did have that because we have animals involved in the sport. It just is what it is, you know. But do you think that because it's off the air now and then they got all these spinoff shows, which we know how spinoff shows work, you know, Seinfeld tried to have one, it didn't work. Friends tried to have one, it didn't work. Do you think that the industry's going to go back down in some sense to where it was beforehand, or do you think some parts of it are going to kind of stay heightened and kind of, like, are going to be forever affected?
Well, you know, it'll be really interesting to explore that because I think that the other things that Taylor Sheridan is doing are equally good, if not better, as in the whole 18, whatever those two shows are.
Right.
Your shows, 18,
yes,
whatever,
I know,
and 1923. Yeah, those. So, and I do watch those, love them to death. And then, of course, some of the movies, and it's like everybody has kind of gotten in the mood to do Westerns again. So, yeah, they're going to be, you know, clunky and goofy and whatnot, but you're also going to have some good ones. And it's just the fact that they made it cool and made it okay. And then I think now, you know, maybe the morals and values are going to come back around and there's going to be more cool and interesting things. And, you know, you've gotten established people now, the Teton Ridge, the American Rodeo, the American Performance Horse deal, the breakaway roping.
What did you call it?
What?
What did you call it? Teton?
Teton Ridge, yeah.
Is it Teton or Teton?
Teton, from the Teton Mountains in Wyoming.
No way.
Yes.
I've been calling it Teton Ridge.
Oh, Teton.
Oh, my. That's funny. No, that's, I'm sorry. I'm glad you just said that because now it's corrected for anybody else to call it tetanus.
That's funny.
Teton. How cool is that? Oh, well, I mean, there's actually a reason why it's called Teton, though. Okay, so nobody knew that. Okay, so sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. But no, you just have, you know, you have all these people infusing enthusiasm and money and interest and coverage and all this stuff. I mean, to me, the RFD guy is who started it all. And before him, it was Donnie Gay. I mean, I remember before I even had my kids that we would do the Mesquite Rodeo. You know what I mean? So there's been so many instrumental people over the years that have put their little, you know, their little shot into the mix. So it's fun to see. But I don't think it's going to go away. I mean, it might have its ebbs and flows, but I don't think it's going to go away.
Yeah, no. I think it's definitely been it's not going to stay, like, high up, obviously. Nothing does, you know, but I do think it's forever changed. And they are talking about, so the shows that you watch are completely separate shows. There is a talk of an actual spinoff with Rip and Kelly from Yellowstone. That's what I was talking about, how most, you know, they'll try to do a spinoff from the original show, doesn't ever work. But all of the other ones, like the one that I think the one you're trying to name is the one's got Faith and Tim in it. That's a really, people really love that show. And then the one that's got Billy Bob Thornton in it, which anything he touches is gold. Like, that's a good show too. Gold mine, or called Oil Mine, or something like it. It's like the oil and the
land
or whatever.
Landman.
That's it.
Landman. Yeah.
Landman. I need to start Googling this. You can tell I don't watch TV. But anyways, that's so cool you call it Teton Ridge. I didn't
know. Well,
my mind blown.
You know the Teton Mountain Range in Wyoming, right? Famous?
Well, obviously not.
Well, you can Google that. Then you won't forget. Yeah, it's world famous.
Well, that's cool. So now it puts a little bit of meaning behind it, because that actually, all of that can get a little confusing, because you've got he bought the 4/6, which he owns, and they film off of. But he also, that Teton Ridge, I keep wanting to say Teton Ridge. they do stallions out there. Like, they have the media company. They have all types of little branches that are doing all kinds of stuff. I think the J.D. Mooney podcast is off of that. They own the Cowboy Channel and the Cowgirl Channel now. They own Cowboys and Indians. So, like, it wasn't just Yellowstone as a show. Like, he did all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I believe it's my understanding that someone else owns Teton Ridge. But and with whatever funds or whatever, however that works out. But they employ the big trainers and have, you know, they have lots of different entities. It's my understanding.
Yeah, because they actually
big influence.
Yeah, because I think they backed the whole American Horseman that you were talking about, where they pulled.
Well, they bought the American Rodeo. I mean, that's huge, right? That's
a huge
event. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Didn't they just say that whoever they just bought, did they buy the PBR too? So, yeah.
Really?
It's a big deal. Yeah.
I'm about to tell you.
Yeah, I think it was in September.
TKO Group Holdings.
Yeah.
Parent company all-stock deal for the trio of businesses was announced last October. Endeavor increasing its ownership of TKO from 53% to 59%. So who is TKO? Is that
I thought it was related to the American. I could be wrong. There's so much going on. It's hard to keep track sometimes.
It is a lot going on.
And I don't care, and I don't, you know, whoever, I mean, you know, yeah, I believe in America First, but whoever wants to get going and put money into our Western way of life and protect what it is we do, I'm all for. So,
well, maybe not. So TKO Holdings is, they own the UFC. They own WWE.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I remember that now. Yeah. So see,
so they just bought the PBR.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah,
this is going to be interesting.
It will be interesting. It will be interesting. So yeah, they know a thing or two about promoting and catering to their audience. So yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, like what's his name? Crap, I can't think of his name right now, but they just started the whole, like, slap contest. They actually have contests where people get on there and they slap each other, and it's like...
Oh, my gosh.
See your reaction? God. That's a normal person's reaction. No, it is huge. It is big.
Oh, my
people
God.
Tune in. It is, Google it. Just Google it. You'll see how, like,
ooh,
many people watch this stuff.
Ooh, this is the gladiator set. Yeah.
So it's the whole entertainment business is almost like, you know what, you can't put nothing past anybody, because most anybody will be willing to watch anything.
Oh, isn't that crazy? Yeah.
That is crazy. So just to kind of wrap things up a little bit here, what I got one more question for you. What, as far as what is one thing that kind of makes you proud to be a part of the reining industry specifically?
Well, it's just that I just want to encourage people. And that's the thing. You know, I always read posts on Facebook where somebody is starting out, doesn't have a lot of money, doesn't have the knowledge, feels less than, and all that stuff. And I just want to encourage people that you don't have to be a mega millionaire. You don't have to have a 75 horse. You just don't have to. You can do this. I mean, I did it. I made a living. I made good money. I traded up, made my kid a world champion 3 times, and she just was reserve champion boxer at the Cow Horse World Show. You know, I mean, my sister-in-law.
Congrats to her.
Well, yes, of course. And my sister-in-law, you know, I just answered somebody this morning, you know, hey, I need your Cinderella story. I need to stay motivated because I'm not cutting it in the cow horse deal. And so I told my sister-in-law a story. You know, yeah, she was raised with horses, but not the kind that she's riding now. And she doesn't have a sugar daddy. She doesn't have a fancy facility. She hasn't had lessons. She didn't ride with a trainer. She builds her own, does her own, funds her own. She just has traded up and kept learning and never quits asking questions and never quits trying. And that's what we did with our kids, with myself, with my business, even my web design business. I just want to encourage people that, I mean, there's going to always be people that just sit back and always gripe thinking somebody else had that silver spoon. But you know what? Oftentimes it's just a well-used shovel. And the people with the shovel can get a lot done if they use that shovel. So that's probably my biggest thing, is I just want to encourage people.
Yes, I think that's an amazing thing, because you're right. A lot of people, most people just pass judgment before they even, nobody asks questions. I can tell you that right now.
They just whine. Yeah. Yeah.
That's probably it. They watch and they assume. They're like, oh, okay, well, that they got this easier. They did this or they did
yes.
that. And nobody really asking the questions because nobody really cares. But it's just like, you know, if you take the time to hear people's story and kind of,
yes.
This is one of the reasons why I even started this whole podcast was, you know, judgment was passed on me and rumors and stuff like that.